From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how Alzheimer's impacts the Latino community especially hard, and what's the latest research?
The risk in Latino-Hispanic populations is about 50% higher overall.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There are volumes and volumes of research on Alzheimer's disease, but there is still so much to learn about its progression in specific racial populations, including Latinos. Now, what's being done to better understand the genetics and biology of Alzheimer's in these different ethnic groups? Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia, accounting for up to 80% of all cases. The disease causes a decline in cognitive abilities and memory loss and leads to death. Clinical trials are being held in San Antonio, and research is being conducted in the Rio Grande Valley to assess and better understand how Alzheimer's progresses in Latino individuals. Could race-specific research lead to new therapies and treatments for patients of different ethnicities? And could clues be teased out in this pursuit that could help a better understanding of Alzheimer's overall? We're talking on this episode of Texas Matters about Alzheimer's research and development. We're joined by Dr. Sudha Seshadri, director of the Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases at UT Health San Antonio. Doctors, good to have you.
Great to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to the people about this important problem.
Also with us is Bess Frost, PhD, professor in the Department of Cell Systems and Anatomy at the Glenn Biggs Institute and of the Sam and Ann Barshop Institute for Longevity and Aging Studies at UT Health San Antonio. And Dr. Bess Frost, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And joining us online, we're joined by Dr. Gladys Maestre, professor of biomedical sciences at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley School of Medicine and director of the Memory Disorder Center at the University Institute for Neurosciences. And it's great to have you, Doctor.
Muchas gracias. Happy to be here.
Dr. Sudha, if you could tell us more about why there has to be a better understanding of Alzheimer's, looking at equity in the research.
We know Alzheimer's is an exploding problem for everybody in the United States, but the risk in Latino-Hispanic populations is about 50% higher overall. We don't completely understand why this is so. We have learned that some of the same genetic factors that are important in European ancestry may act differently in Hispanics. And there are previous instances where understanding this difference led to new therapies. Importantly, the PCSK9 drugs were discovered in an African American family that had a low risk of high cholesterol and heart disease. So understanding the disease in Hispanics could be important for everybody. The other big issue, of course, is that disparities, social behavioral factors that my colleague, Dr. Maestre, can speak to, are an important modifiable factor increasing the risk. We know that over the next decade, the number of people with Alzheimer's among the Hispanic community will increase 6 times. So the time to study it is now.
Can you tell us more about Alzheimer's disease as it is affecting the overall general population and why we have this Alzheimer's time bomb concern?
Alzheimer's is really a tsunami hitting the world. As the population ages, the proportion of people over the age of 65, and especially the oldest old over the age of 85, is exploding. And we know that 1 in 5 persons over the age of 65 will develop disease before they die, 1 in 3 over the age of 85. And for every 1% affected, there are about 3 caregivers whose lives are turned upside down. There is a cost to the country of nearly $300 billion each year, so that the goal is that we spend at least 1% of that on research to prevent and treat and care for these people who are developing the disease every day. Texas is particularly hard hit because we are a large state and we have the second largest number of deaths due to Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Frost, as you study Alzheimer's, you're looking at the at the cell, very cellular level. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
And what are you seeing? What is leading to the decline of the cell life? What kills the cell, the brain cell?
Yeah, so we're really focused on the effects of the protein called tau, which is the one that Dr. Seshadri mentioned accumulates inside of the neurons.
Is that the plaque that we're seeing?
It's called the neurofibrillary tangles. It's different from the plaques. So though we're finding that those toxic forms of tau really affect how DNA is packaged within the cell.
And is tau like a fragment of a protein? Is it a protein? What is it?
It's a protein that normally has a positive role in the cell. So it helps, it binds to a type of protein in the cell called microtubules, which is how cells transport different proteins from one end of a cell to the other, and they give the cell structure.
So we're getting an overproduction of this.
Well, you get little tags on the tau protein in the disease context where it's not performing its regular job, and it's doing other toxic things in the cell. And we're working on figuring out what those other toxic things are, so that we could potentially find drugs that block that from happening. So a major focus is on the effects of tau on how your DNA is wound up within the cell. So normally, you know, your DNA is not all floppy like a noodle inside of your cell. It's actually packaged into certain areas that are very, very tightly wound up. And genes that are in those areas are turned off. And then there are areas of a genome that are more open, and those genes are turned on in general. So tau causes the areas of the genome that are very, very tightly wound up to open a bit. And we're studying what the consequences are when those areas of the genome become more relaxed and open, and how that causes the cells to die.
We don't see this in healthy brain cells.
That's true. That's right.
And so are we trying to figure out, like, how do we repress this effect?
Yes. So one of the things that we're finding is that the areas of DNA that are very, very tightly wound up, they're enriched for what's colloquially known as jumping genes. So they're pieces of DNA, some of which have the ability to make a copy of themselves and insert that copy somewhere else in the genome. This is one of the things that we've discovered in the lab. They're kind of like retroviruses, sort of, but it's something that we have in our own genome. So in models in the lab, we're using antiretroviral medications to stop this from happening in the lab models. And we see that in the lab, if we give these HIV drugs, basically, we can stop this jumping gene jumping from happening. So that's one of the major focuses of the lab right now.
So where is the jumping gene jumping from?
It's jumping from areas of the genome. So they're called endogenous retroviruses. It's thought that these pieces of our genome are due to infections that happened millennia ago, viral infections, where the viral genome got stuck in our genome. In our genome, we figured out how to kind of keep these turned off or to use these for something beneficial in terms of regulating other genes. But in the context of tauopathy, it seems like they're getting activated when they shouldn't be activated.
Okay. So as I understand it, the genome that we have, only there's a large part of it that we consider inactive.
That's right.
And that maybe that might just be redundancies in order to protect that's one theory, in order to protect it, or it might just be old information that has been sort of like old files that we no longer look at, and so kind of pushed towards the back.
That's right.
And maybe some of those old files are jumping forward and now becoming part of an active part of our genes.
Yes.
What causes this to become something that is happening across populations?
Well, right now, what we do in the lab is we figure out what's going on in using multiple model systems. We use cell culture. We culture cells in a plate and look at what's happening. We use fruit fly models of Alzheimer's disease, and we use mouse models of Alzheimer's disease. And then once we think we have a grasp on what's going on, we use brain tissue from people who have donated their brains for research to see if what we found in the model systems is actually happening in the human cases as well. So I think it's really appropriate that you ask this particular question, because right now I can't say that what we're finding. So we have found that what we're seeing in the lab seems to be true in the human brains as well. However, the human brains that are donated to brain tissue repositories are mostly Caucasian people. So even though 20% of people in the United States are Hispanic, in the brain banks, we only have about 2-3% are made up of Hispanic individuals. So what we're doing is, we're doing things with tissue that's available to us, and it's mostly Caucasian individuals. So we really need more representation of Hispanics within the brain tissue repository and other.
So that brings us to our other panelist, Dr. Gladys Maestre, at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. And can you talk about Alzheimer's is impacting the Latino community? Is it any different?
Well, our understanding is that there are genes and there are biological liabilities, but also the environment is very, very important for the development of a complex disease such as Alzheimer's, and particularly at the cumulative influences that ended up at the end of life or late in life expressing or manifesting with memory deficits and behavioral alterations. Epidemiological studies have shown across the world that Hispanics residing either in their country of nativity or in the United States or in other countries like Europe present more Alzheimer's disease, more than European Americans or Europeans, and even more than African Americans. And we don't understand why. Not only there is more disease, but the disease appear earlier in life, approximately 7 years earlier. So, and this is not because Hispanics go more to the doctor or report more memory problems. So this is concerning that not only is affecting more people, but they are affected at an age where they should be just still producing and engaging in the best part of their life, collecting the fruits of their efforts. And in terms of the clinical manifestations, it's also problematic that most of the behavioral problems that really make caregivers very stressed out occur at night. Like nocturnal behavior, people wanted to go out and these perturbances, then the caregiver is tired of, all day perhaps working and trying to take care of this person, and then at night the caregiver has to, also bear with that. So that's very burdensome. So there are studies that compare the symptoms and the signs of the disease across ethnic groups, and this particular trait of nocturnal aberrant behavior is more noticeable within the Hispanic population. So this creates, a massive amount of people that are really suffering, not only the impact of having a loved one that is sick, but having, the cause of the disease earlier in life. And because the Hispanics live longer, even, within the United States, so people with the disease also lives longer. So you have more people affected earlier and that are alive with the disease for longer time. So caregivers and the family undergo more stress for, proportion of time that is just quite long and substantial.
Dr. Sudra, as you help lead programs looking at Alzheimer's, how important or how accessible is it that you're able to find Latinos who are willing to participate in clinical trials to help figure out the answers to some of these troubling questions?
It is of extreme importance. All over the country, one of the biggest challenges for clinical trials is having people generously donate of their time and take the trouble to join clinical trials. We know that overall people in clinical trials have a better outcome than people not in clinical trials, perhaps because of the attention they receive. Even if they are on a placebo, other problems can be picked up easier. Hispanics are very underrepresented in all types of trials. There are trials that we do to understand the disease, and we are doing some of these right here in San Antonio, trying to recruit as many Hispanic participants as we can. We are doing trials of vascular brain injury called MARC-VCID. We are doing trials of mild cognitive impairment. There are also trials that are drug trials, and these can be either to see the safety of a drug, and that needs to be done not just in Europeans but in Hispanics because their body metabolism may be different. That needs to be done in men as well as in women. These are phase 1-2 trials. And then there are the phase 3 trials where we are actually seeing where we think it's very likely the medicine will help, but we need to show that it does in a large national double-blind trial. We also have a brain donation program. Dr. Frost spoke about the challenge of having brain tissue from persons who have died with the disease. And this is offered free to all people who wish to make this generous donation, regardless of where they are living in Texas. And it helps research, but it also gives a family an answer as to what their loved one had, is it genetic, and such questions. So I would really appeal to all of us as Texans to volunteer for these trials because that is the most precious resource.
And Dr. Gladys Maestre at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley, the issue of the impact on the Latino population of Alzheimer's, and you're telling us that we see it in the population earlier and possibly more severe than in other populations. Trying to figure that out, it's not just a look at genetic reasoning, but it could be anything, even lifestyle issues?
Yeah, there are different things, different levels that we need to account, and we are starting to understand. Comorbidities are very, very important, you know, the presence of hypertension and diabetes. But we also think that family support is very important for a very strong cognition, life course cognition. Having emotional support in the sense that family support, it's one mechanism to compensate stress in life. And we think that many of Hispanics in the United States, even though they have a very extended family, many have that peace broken because they are separated geographically. So family, we are looking at familism as one level, and also we are looking at factors such as neighborhood level, such as certain characteristics of the neighborhoods, the places where we live, but also places where we work that we think are not buffering the stress, but increasing stress. Discrimination, for example, is one aspect. Social cohesion are all elements that might influence how a person lives their everyday reality. And we think that perhaps this is a modulating factor in the expression of all those genes and biological factors that we can study in the lab, in the real life, is much more complex, right, and more difficult to understand. So we are trying to look at South Texas, the elements of life and the elements of neighborhood and also environment, like pollution, particulate matter, and all these things that may have an influence, not only at older age or middle age, but from a life course perspective. Even the presence or the occurrence of adverse events in earlier life, all these things may impact the brain in a way that when the person reaches a certain age will have the manifestation of a clinical sign that we will say we will be poor memory at the beginning and then may evolve to become Alzheimer's disease.
And Dr. Best Frost, we talk about genes, and when you have a gene, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do what it's supposed to do. It's about when the gene is expressed, when it's expressed, for how long it's going to be expressed, and we talk about like triggers, what's going to turn that gene on and off. And do factors like stress play a role in that?
Yes, for sure. Environmental stress.
Yeah, like environmental stress or emotional stress.
Yeah. I don't think we know if environmental stress or emotional stress is going to trigger formation of plaques or tangles. But certainly, if you have plaques or tangles in the brain and you put stress on top of that, it can affect the disease duration. So it can make symptoms, you know, appear faster or make the disease progress at a more rapid rate.
And does this happen suddenly or is this over the course of 20, 30 years?
It's pretty slow. I mean, by the time someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, we know that the tangles and the plaques have been accumulating in their brain for decades. But in terms of cognitive decline, sometimes there can be a triggering event. For instance, you know, if you recovering from a stroke, you could be, you know, cognitively okay and then have a stroke. And then after you're recovering from the stroke, you start to see evidence of cognitive deficit.
Dr. Sudra?
I will definitely be happy to speak to that. We are increasingly finding that genes are not destiny, that if you look at people who have a certain degree of genetic risk, whether it's apolipoprotein E or some of the other 40 genes we know increase the risk of Alzheimer's, those who have a better lifestyle, as defined by the American Heart Association's Life Simple 7, controlling blood pressure, cholesterol, diet, not smoking, exercising, have a lower risk of developing the disease over a 10-year period, about a 30% lower risk than those who have one or two of these factors in an abnormal or bad range. So that's the sort of interaction we are talking about. There was another study we had done where we looked at people with the same amount of brain shrinkage. And those who did not have somebody to speak to, who were lonely, did worse on cognitive testing with the same degree of brain injury than those who had that social support. So there is structural injury and there's functional deficit, and some of these social behavioral factors may be acting at that level through proteins like brain-derived neurotrophic factor and other things that we know that social cohesion has a biological component. Things like oxytocin, GDF-11, BDNF are chemicals our body produces that help promote social cohesion. Humans are a social creatures.
These raises a lot of questions for Dr. Gladys Meister when you look at the impact on the Latino population with Alzheimer's. And we wonder about, you know, what's going to impact the body more than what you actually put into it, what kind of food that you're consuming. And is there a look at diet and other consumption of alcohol or smoking and all these other things that people experience? Is that something that is being looked at?
It is. There are several studies in South Texas looking at lifestyle. But I want to point out that these are very complex because you have exposures all your life. And it's even hard to remember how was the diet pattern, you know, when you were an adolescent, for example, and to really be precise. So diet studies are very hard to do and require actually direct observation across, you know, not only 1 week to find out really what is the individual actually eating or drinking, because self-reports, as you can imagine, are very unreliable. But I want to point out to the poverty. Poverty is a main risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. 40% of Hispanics in the U.S. reside in poverty, below the poverty level, in neighborhoods that do not have enough resources to create healthy and vibrant living experience. So we are trying to understand in South Texas what are the characteristics of the neighborhoods that we can actually look at and see how they interact with all these biological and cognitive aspects that we are looking at.
Dr. Maestra, based on what you've told me in this conversation, Latinos have, what's the percentage that you told me are dealing with Alzheimer's at a greater rate?
So in general, when we look at individuals over 65 in the U.S., the percentage of Alzheimer's and related dementias is about 6 to 7%. And Latinos have a higher, depending on the state, and the approximately 50% more than that.
So are we doing enough to reach out to this population to at least provide more treatment and more support, particularly since we know that dealing with individuals with Alzheimer's in your family, it's going to take a lot of resources?
Definitely, we need to do much more. Support for the person with dementia, you know, support for the person that is anxious, that is seeing that their memory is deteriorating and having that fear that might be Alzheimer's disease. And so the person do not look for that until it's too late. That's one aspect. The other aspect is that there is the perception that certain memory problems are just normal with aging. So Latino communities tend to just wait until it's just too late. So we really need to open the doors for them. And the thing is that treatment is, you know, the treatment is just supportive. The treatment doesn't cure, so it's, and it's expensive. And in many, it's hard to get. The coverage of Latinos for insurance, you know, is low. So it's just too hard. And then on top of that, in our state, we have the problem of public transportation, where there are areas, because a large percentage is in rural areas, it's very hard just to have access to health care. And this is what we are trying to establish in South Texas in collaboration with the Bakes Institute. We want to create a network where it will be easier for anybody to have their memory tested and see whatever language, Spanish, English, or even bilingual, the Spanglish, so people feel comfortable, confident, and have a better access to diagnosis at earlier stage. And with the hope that we can provide these clinical trials, not only for medications, but also for lifestyle modification and for support for caregivers.
That's Dr. Gladys Maestre, an Alzheimer's researcher at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley School of Medicine. We're also joined by Bess Frost, PhD, a professor in the Department of Cell Systems and Anatomy at the Glenn Biggs Institute and at the Barshop Institute for Longevity and Aging Studies at UT Health San Antonio. And Dr. Sudra Seddadri, director of the Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases at UT Health San Antonio. From February 23rd to the 25th, the Glenn Biggs Institute will hold a scientific conference in San Antonio looking at the latest Alzheimer's research and at developments in treatment and care for those with Alzheimer's, with a special focus on how the disease is impacting the Latino community. There's more online at biggsinstitute.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.